Welcome to The Commerce Order, powered by Kibo, the podcast that brings you closer to the future of commerce. Each episode, we sit down with industry leaders, innovators, and Kibo experts to unpack the latest trends, tackle the toughest challenges, and reveal the strategies shaping retail, e-commerce, and order management. Join us as we explore how technology, culture, and consumer behavior intersect to redefine the shopping experience. I'm your host, Natalia Pavich, Senior Director of Product Marketing at Kibo Commerce, and here is the episode. Just a quick note for our listeners. The opinions of the guests are their own and do not reflect the corporation where they work.
With over 25 years of experience, Jason Greenwood is a B2B e-commerce specialist and the founder of Greenwood Consulting, where he helps brands and suppliers design exceptional digital buying experiences. He is the host of the E-Commerce Edge podcast with more than 550 episodes and regularly shares his industry insights with over 33,000 followers on LinkedIn. A passionate mentor, keynote speaker, and content producer, Jason is dedicated to giving back to the industry and is available to speak at events, moderate panels, and MC. Originally from the USA, he spent nearly 30 years in New Zealand and is now based in Mexico. Today, Jason will be sharing his insights on why the era of the web portal might be fading as digital buying agents begin to talk directly to digital selling agents. We'll also dive into the world of vibe coding and how AI tools are empowering small teams to build custom software at a fraction of the usual cost. Finally, we'll discuss the essential data foundations every B2B organization needs to lay before they can truly harness the power of AI. Hope you enjoy the interview.
Hello, welcome to the show. I'm so excited by you joining us today. Why don't you tell me a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Jason Greenwood, been working in e-commerce for 25 plus years. Absolutely love it. Can't imagine waking up every day and doing anything different to what I do now. I've run and built brands. I've run and built agencies. And for the last 5+ years, I've run my own independent B2B focused e-commerce consultancy. I work with manufacturers, distributors, platform vendors, SIs, and investors, all focused on the B2B e-commerce space. And I also am very fortunate in that I get to do lots of public speaking. I get to MC events and conferences and webinars and all sorts of stuff in our space. And I'm a big, big content producer. Have my own podcast with over 570 episodes released called The E-Commerce Edge. And we release 3 episodes a week. So I get to do what you do, which is to talk to amazing guests and learn amazing things along the way. So yeah, I'm just deeply immersed in every aspect of our industry.
When you told me you had 560 episodes on the E-Commerce Edge, I was like, wow, that's amazing. What a power, like so much effort and energy. You know, you're obviously, and like, you know, anybody listening to this, you're a bit of a celebrity in the industry. I'm just excited that you're joining us here today. So, but I'm going to start, I'm not going to let you off easy. So what is an unpopular opinion that you have?
My unpopular opinion that I'm going to share today is that I think that headless commerce or composable commerce, well, both of those are actually going to end up being more impactful, more highly deployed, more consequential in the B2B e-commerce space than it ever has been and probably ever will be in the B2C and D2C world. And
wow,
we'll talk about that a little bit more in terms of AI and why I think that AI in particular and its impact on the B2B world is creating this unique opportunity. I don't mean headless storefronts. I mean other headless channels. And we'll get into that obviously as we go along.
Okay. Well, you know, that is crazy, right? That's crazy because headless and composable are such techie terms. And the question is, how could an industry that doesn't even know what they are all of a sudden realize it's the most important thing to them and why? So those are some questions that I have. On the other hand, I actually fully agree with you and I have my reasons, but let's dive into that right now because you've opened a can of worms and we didn't prepare this, which is great.
Yep.
So like, why is headless and composable going to be important? And the other question I have is how?
Yeah.
How are we going to get there?
I totally feel that question. Look, it's been an interesting journey and an interesting evolution for me, even over the last 12 to 18 months with the impacts of AI and seeing the emerging impacts of AI on the B2B e-commerce world. And I think I started to get religion around the headless opportunity for B2B when I started to recognize the power of multimodal AI. And I'm going to give you an example. So in the beginning, when I first started using ChatGPT and some of these answer engines, It was all text. Like if you wanted to translate a bit of text, you'd copy and paste a bit of text in there and you'd say, translate this to Spanish or English or whatever it is. Now I can take a photo of a recipe, or I can take a photo of a can of something, or I can take a photo when I'm out, because I live in Mexico now, I can take a photo of something, a sign, you know, something like that. I can upload the image to ChatGPT and I can say, translate this to English. Or I've used this example in my own podcast before. When I was buying a dirt bike here in Mexico, and I was looking on Facebook Marketplace and I was looking at dirt bikes, and oftentimes they would have the model and sometimes the make, but oftentimes not the year of the motorcycle. So I'd download the images from Meta, Facebook. Then I'd upload those to ChatGPT and I'd say, tell me what this motorcycle is. And it would say, it's based on these 53 things that I can see in the image, it's this make, it's this model, it's the year, this year. And oh, and by the way, it's got an aftermarket seat, it's got aftermarket this, and it's got aftermarket that. Would you like me to, you know, tell you more, kind of thing. And so nowadays, I can upload a 200-page PDF to ChatGPT, and I can ask it to summarize it for me. I can ask for a piece of very specific information from the PDF. It'll tell me what page it's on. It will summarize it down into two paragraphs for me. It will do all that for me, and it will do it in a matter of seconds. So the beautiful thing about multimodal AI, and you can upload any format of data, any format of document, it can interpret it, it can parse it, and then it can tell you information about that data. Now, what's super interesting about the multimodal aspects of this is that in the B2B world, we have a scenario where e-commerce is still not that common. And where e-commerce is common, oftentimes manufacturers and distributors will consider EDI and Punchout their version of e-commerce, not a self-service e-commerce portal. And so what happens in the B2B world, account management, SDRs, BDRs, BDMs, customer service, they still play a very significant role in client communication and services.
Yeah.
And what that means is that the buyer is oftentimes communicating with an account manager via email, Slack, Teams, WhatsApp, text message. They are communicating with an account manager, and they're oftentimes generating, say, for example, a PDF of a PO on their side, the buyer's side. They're emailing it to their account manager, or they're emailing it to customer service, and they're saying, can you place this order for us, and then they manually key it into an ERP system. And the same happens over WhatsApp and Slack and Teams. They're asking for quotes. They're asking for inventory availability. They're asking for pricing. They're asking for, what's my MOQ? What's my buying increments? They're asking all the same questions that they would normally get answered by logging into a self-service e-commerce portal where they would see their own pricing. They would see their own catalog. They would see, you know, which inventory locations they're able to buy or do will call from. And now, because of this multimodal AI capability, we now can put a man in the middle, but it's not a man, it's a robot, effectively, a multimodal AI agent, smack in the middle of these traditional communications channels, and they now become headless commerce channels. Because if we have a commerce solution in place, we now have API endpoints that we can farm out these messages to, we can get meaningful answers from, and we can present them directly to the customer in those channels. So I've seen, for example, there are platforms out there. One of them is called Motivate, just as an example. There's many examples out there, but Motivate's one where, you know, someone can send in an email with a PO PDF attached. This system that sits in the middle, which is effectively a middleware tool, will strip out the PDF. It will parse it using multimodal AI. It will map it directly into the commerce system as if the customer logged in to place that order in the portal. So what's great about this, and it can also receive images, it can receive anything. So if let's say I'm a builder and I'm on a job site and I realize, geez, okay, I'm short of, 20 sheets of drywall, or I need, some 2x4, or I need whatever for this building project. You know, I'm not going to probably log onto my phone and log into a portal and search for something and place an order. I might write my order, literally handwrite my order on a piece of drywall or on a building tile, and then I might snap a photo of that. And where historically I would have messaged that to my account manager via WhatsApp and said, hey mate, hey Bob, hey Jane, can you send me these three things I need for the building site? How fast can you get it to me? And what's my price? And then they'd message back, right? Well, now we've got these multimodal AI systems that effectively have turned these channels into headless commerce channels. And it is really only the multimodal AI capability that is facilitating this to happen. Whereas historically, if suppliers wanted to do anything with data exchange, it was either via EDI or it was via OCR, where they, and it was just dumb OCR. It was not smart enabled OCR. Mm. And oftentimes that data that got extracted out of documents was inaccurate and needed to be reviewed by a human anyway. And so this is a very, very exciting time for B2Bs, because when they make an investment into a commerce system, the less that they need to require their customers to change their behavior to take advantage of that commerce system, the better. Because it automatically means high adoption rates, right? Sure, you can go and sit by the customer and help them log in and help them figure out how to use this new portal and all that sort of stuff. But there's a percentage of those customers that no matter how good of a job you do trying to onboard them and train them, they will never use a portal. But they still want to do business with you at scale, and they want to just keep doing business with you. They love Bob, they love Jane, their account managers, and they want to continue to have that relationship with their account manager. But we need to unburden the account managers from all this manual effort of keying in orders, sending across product information to the customer in a zip file, searching a network drive, all that sort of stuff. And multimodal AI is facilitating every single piece of functionality that I've just described.
Okay. Well, I have a lot of follow-up questions. I don't know where to start, actually. So what you're saying is that we should forget the website and leapfrog into AI, primarily AI interactions. Am I hearing that correct?
I think for some customers, there are some customers that still will prefer to log in. If they're sitting at their desk, they'll prefer to log into a e-commerce website portalized experience where they can download their previous invoices, they can check the status of their credit account, they can log a quote request, they can they can place an order, they can check their MOQs, their pricing, their catalog availability, all that sort of stuff. But there is a certain percentage of most customer cohorts in the B2B world that will not transact with you in that way. But we still want to serve them digitally, and we still want to automate as many of those interactions as we can to make us more efficient as a supplier and to give better service to our customers, meaning that we're not forcing them to change their behavior unless they want to. Now, there's a certain cohort of those customers that will be telling you already, I want you to have a portal. I want you to give me an e-commerce website that I can log into and do all these things.
Yeah.
So I think meeting the customer where they are, not where we expect them to be, is the most important thing we can do.
Right. And to your point, you know, what's funny is that B2B as an industry hasn't even jumped on the fully commerce bandwagon. So there's still a lot of headway, and yet the market's moving on to AI. And to your point, buyers are going to, they're contacting their sellers all the time. They want to talk to somebody. They're not in the, like, I want to go self-service my own return in the account management folder, right? So, but isn't that putting the cart before the horse? Like, how are the B2B organizations going to get there if they don't have that commerce base? How are they going to take advantage of all the AI that's out there?
Yeah, and that's why with my clients, I really encourage them to take a crawl, walk, run approach. Because oftentimes a client will come to me, and in the first instance, kind of the first words out of their mouth, or the first question out of their mouth is, Jason, how can we use AI in our business? And it's like, whoa, slow down there, chief. You don't have a PIM system. You don't do e-commerce today. You do everything in a green screen ERP. You've undergone no digital transformation in your business for the last 15 years, 20 years. You've got no digital enablement. You've got no digital capability in terms of people inside your business that even understand digital. You've got an aging sales force that, you know, are all 40 plus. Oftentimes, they know their product inside and out. They know their industry inside and out, but they don't know digital inside and out. And so we have to try to sort of, I try not to be a wet blanket in the sense that it excites me that they're excited about AI, and I'm not trying to quench that thirst, but I'm also trying to say, look, we have to start back at the beginning. We have to build on a solid foundation, and all this amazing AI tooling available through all the vendors that you could choose to work with out there in the market, they all rely on certain data building blocks being available in your business before they can do their magic. Yeah. There's certain foundational components that actually already have to be there, and you have none of those in place. So how about we start back at the beginning? We look at your product data. We look at how it's organized. We look at how complete it is. We look at where all the data is housed and what format it's in, and is there consistency around it? We look at your customer data. We look how that's organized. We look at, you know, the parent account versus the buyers within the account, buyer permissions, credit limits, you know, what kind of shipping you provide for them, and whether they can, you know, do will call and come and pick up from your warehouse. And, we, you know, my discovery is like, you know, several hundred questions long when I go in and I'm starting to work with these manufacturers and distributors. Yeah. But the whole point I'm trying to make here is that they're oftentimes B2Bs are trying to leapfrog all the hard work and jump straight to the shiny new thing, which is AI. And they just, it's really hard for them to grasp why they need to put in the foundational effort first.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because there's so much work required to get to that scalable, you know, AI service, get the LLMs actually working for you. But there's also an opportunity here, right? Because instead of trying to redo what the journey that B2C has been on, B2B has the opportunity to leapfrog B2C and move straight to that AI first kind of world. They still have to do all the same legwork, it sounds like. And we'll get into that. But, you know, I wanted to ask you, one of the things that's clear here to me, this is obvious, but maybe not to everybody, and maybe you can tell me more, is headless and composable and how important that is for an agentic AI-based future. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so let's go back to why this is going to become, and it's starting to become already, a very important capability that the suppliers have.
Yeah.
And that's because on the buy side, the buyer is maturing and their technology is maturing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of buyers out there that use procurement platforms like the Jaggers, the Coupas, the Aribas of the world, that they do all their procurement either in the standalone dedicated procurement platform, or they have a procurement module inside of their ERP where they're creating all their POs, they're creating their buying lists, they store their price lists from their suppliers in there. They do all this whole entire procurement function, and usually led by a procurement manager on the buy side. And they want to automate that process as much as humanly possible. Now, the reason why they want to automate this is because if they can claw back 100, 200, 300 basis points of margin, that is substantial for their business. Because in the B2B world, it's extremely common to run anywhere from 2 to 4% net margins. Like, that's very common. And as a result of that, anything that they can save from a procurement cost and complexity perspective, making them more efficient, that's direct margin they can put into their back pocket. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what's going to eventually come, and these platforms are already talking about agentic procurement, but what that means is the on the buy side, there's not going to be a human being anymore. There's going to be a digital agent doing the buying, mm-hmm. which means that they have to have a digital sales agent on the selling side to be able to communicate with. Otherwise, right. We can't do this. We can't create this agentic procurement pipeline if there's not the supplier and the buyer working together to build that pipeline to communicate with each other electronically. So I look at agentic buying or agentic procurement or agentic commerce. Yeah. I look at that as kind of the Novu version of EDI, right? It's the super modern version of EDI. And just like in an EDI mediated world, you've got to speak the language as the seller. You have to speak the language of EDI, and you have to have the technology to receive the EDI buying messages, electronic data interchange message from the buyer. You're going to have to do the exact same thing in an agentic commerce world. Now, the beauty of agentic commerce is that in the same way that I can upload a PDF today to ChatGPT and it can give me meaningful information, those agentic buying technologies, we're going to get to a place in the very near future where, let's say I'm a builder and I need to buy some building supplies, I'll be able to upload my plans, literally the plans of what I'm building, to my agentic buying platform. I'll be able to parse that. I'll be able to interpret that, and I'll be able to send that down the pipeline to my agentic seller. They'll be able to interpret that and parse that and say, okay, cool. The agentic buyer will say, based on these plans, what can you supply? What is my price? And when can you get it to me? Okay. The agentic seller will go, okay, cool. Based on the plans and our review, digital review of the plans, here's the basically the buying list, the procurement list that we need to fulfill. We can fulfill 80% of the components on this list based on the plans. Here's your price. Here's our warehouse availability, and here's how fast we can get it to you. Or you tell us the date you want us to ship and for it to arrive on your building site, and we can make that happen too. So this is all being enabled by AI. But again, the procurement side of the industry is currently further ahead on this sort of digitalization journey than the sell side. And so the sell side is still and has been playing catch up for the last decade. And so this is where there's this friction where the suppliers and sellers are going to be forced to modernize very soon. If they're not, if they don't already have a digital gun to their head, so to speak, from the buyers that say, hey, why haven't you given us a portal yet that we can buy through, a self-service portal? They are really going to get the heat put on them once agentic buying becomes the norm.
I mean, you're talking about agent-to-agent commerce.
Yes.
Right? So you're 100%. Talking about buyers the agent, sellers the agent. We both know that in order for this to work, APIs have to be really robust from an architecture perspective, because they can't not be able to pull up all the product information or not be able to pull up the entire catalog, have to go category by category. There's so many limitations that some platforms have. So that's going to be key. I mean, I just out of curiosity, do you think that these agents are going to speak English with each other? They might have their own agentic language, right?
Well, the thing is that already AI and these large language models, you can, you know, if I'm a native Spanish speaker, I can speak to ChatGPT in Spanish. If I'm a native French speaker, I can speak to it in French. I can speak to it in English. Doesn't really matter. But it will be primarily human language based, because that's the beauty of LLMs, is they are used to human language and not having to speak some esoteric language like EDI with this custom syntax and these custom rules. That's the beauty, is that we can use plain language. The other beautiful thing is that all of this information gets turned into vector data, so that like if I upload some plans, that gets vectorized, so that way when I'm comparing my vectorized product data using cosine linkages, which is how LLMs work. They base it on proximity and prediction of what should come next. It's like, think of it as an ultra smart autocomplete mechanism. That's how the search and find from the query to the result get matched together for relevance. And so being able to turn a plan or a PDF or a CSV file or whatever, being able to turn that into a vectorized set of data that then I then can search my product data set, my pricing data set, all this information that I've got in my catalog, my digital catalog. I then now am finding vectors that would auto-complete what I would typically need to fulfill that order. And so in a nutshell, that sort of leads very nicely onto what I think is going to be a massive change in the way that PIM systems are designed, built, and maintained, because we're now in a world where instead of having to feed these LLMs highly structured product data, we now can just dump any format of data into just a gigantic data store that can be indexed with vector indexing, right? We don't have to structure it in any human meaningful way, because the LLMs can query these massive data stores with tens of thousands of documents and PDFs and CSVs and images and zip files and everything else, and pull meaningful responses from unstructured and certainly not consistently structured data. And so I think all of this capability around AI is going to start affecting even the way in which we structure our data to begin with, foundationally. I think that's going to change significantly over the next 1 to 3 years.
Real quick, define a vector for me.
Yeah, well, it's basically a numerical representation of a piece of data. So we might recognize it as an image, but effectively we're breaking the image up, or the LLMs, when they ingest it, they are breaking it up into effectively ones and zeros, or coordinates. They're breaking it up into coordinates of information so that instead of just being able to auto-complete words, we now can auto-complete queries based on a digitalized version of that piece of data, whatever type of data that is. It could be a JPEG, it could be a CSV, it could be a PDF. So that's in a nutshell, we're turning it into coordinates that almost like a map that allows the response to be a vectorized response from an LLM, so that matches what we're looking to get out of the vectorized originating data, the raw data.
Yeah. So you're getting deep into like how LLMs work, and I actually didn't know that, but that's fascinating.
Yep.
I don't know a lot of things, so it's not surprising. But when you think about a vector, like you said, it's almost like translating data into a unified framework. It's saying like, well, everything, an image, an audio file, a transcript can all become a vector.
Yes.
Right. And that vector has multi dimensions. It has values in those dimensions. It has a direction. So mathematically speaking, now you're playing with something where you take that unstructured data. Now everything's a vector. Now you can start to you know, move it around and put it all together.
Correct.
What's interesting to me, I think this gets lost in the shuffle a lot, is you have these LLMs that are able to understand contextually what customers are saying. And, you know, obviously you see the rise of agentic AI, Kibo. At Kibo, we have our own agentic commerce offering. We have shopper agents, merchandising agents, et cetera. What's interesting to me is a lot of people miss the fact that your search engine on the site also has to be pretty good for it to actually work, because even though the LLM can understand what you're saying, it doesn't mean that you can find it.
Yes.
And I think that gets missed. So it's funny in the sense that it needs to break it down by vectors. But then if you're using synonym or keyword search, I like to say, which is the most common search out there, by the way, which is where you put in something, it picks up a few keywords and looks for those keywords in the description. It's like putting lipstick on a pig, quite frankly. And so I think what is your search engine gets misunderstood. It's not a question people are asking when they're buying agentic commerce and not understanding they have to bundle those two together. Or just a comment. I don't have a question. But if you want to respond, that's fine.
Yeah, well, I think what's super interesting is that instead of having, you know, this goes back to the fundamental way in which we architect. The fundamental way in which we architect commerce stacks today is, okay, we have a PIM system, for example, product information management system. We take all of this weird and wonderful data, we normalize it, we standardize it, we structure it. We have buckets of both structured and unstructured data. So we have arrays and attributes that can be reused across more than one product, that's structured data. And then we have certain product-specific data that's like a long description, which is like might be a paragraph. And that only applies to one product because that's describing that product in a narrative detail. That is unstructured data because by definition can only be applied to that one product, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so there's a whole ton of work, especially in the distribution world where 200,000 items to 2 million items is pretty common in the distribution world. Mm-hmm. And to do that effort to standardize, normalize, map, create structured and unstructured data, put it into your PIM system in a meaningful way, create all of your taxonomies in terms of categorization, subcategorization, attributes, filters, facets, linkages between cross-sells, upsells, related products, all that sort of stuff. That is a massive lift today. And yes, there are some AI tools that can help ingest that data, then normalize it on the way out and map it into something like a PIM. So there are AI tools that assist in this process, but there is usually still a fairly significant amount of human effort required to answer questions like, for example, okay, I've got for the reference of an inch attribute of an item, I might have one product that has I capital I lowercase n dot. I might have another item that comes from another supplier that is I lowercase, lowercase n dot. I might have uppercase I, lowercase n, no dot. I might have lowercase I, lowercase n, no dot. Then I might have for some inch, literally the word inch. Now they all refer to the same attribute.
Yes.
But I don't want to have that attribute duplicated 10 different times in my PIM system.
Yeah.
I want to normalize, standardize, and map that so that every product that has an inch reference uses the same attribute, right? Attribute value actually right. is what it is. So it might be the attribute might be length. And then underneath that, you might have values like inch, millimeter, meter, yard, you know, all the different potential length attributes you have of a product.
Yeah.
You might have all those, but we need to standardize those where they're referring to the same attribute value. And so that normalization, there are AI tools that can help with that,
yeah.
but there usually needs to be a human in the middle because at some point we have to decide which version of that attribute value we're going to use and standardize on. And so this is where LLMs in the future, I think we're not going to need to normalize and standardize that because what's going to happen is an LLM knows that IN dot, capital IN dot, inch, IN with no dot, they know that that all refers to an inch. So we won't need to standardize that because it knows that if I'm referring to M or meter, it's referring to the same thing, right? In relation to length. So I think that's the really exciting thing for me is that we still have this intermediate step today. We have to standardize and normalize that data before we can inject it into something like a commerce platform. So that so that people, when they're doing a search for a, you know, when they're doing a search for a valve, for example, on a on an industrial supplier's website, you know, we have to know the inside diameter, the outside diameter, the flow rate capability, all these different things. We have to know all these different attributes around that product because we're speccing it into a specific job, and it has to be able to be able to do that job. So today, we still have to standardize this data before we even get it into our commerce systems. In the future, I'm just I'm pretty confident we won't have to do that anymore.
I mean, you're kind of blowing my mind because, you know, you're really bringing into view sort of like this huge data issue that we have. And to your point, it's been going on forever. Like, hey, you know, we've got this product. Now we have to list it on several different marketplaces. And if we're going to move into this world where drop shipping and marketplaces and third parties, that becomes more and more important, then the problem becomes incredible in complexity, right? I also like how you're geeking out on like the definition of an inch. You get you're very excited about this, but I love that because you know, for a long time we thought the solution was going to be standardizing on terms and attributes across industries, and now this is flipped on its head. We don't have to do that anymore. AI is here to structure the data for us. I mean, nobody likes to clean up data, right? So being able to have AI tools to help us do that is tremendous. So and where do you think we are right now? Like, I feel like we're in this like special moment, like a tipping point almost. Like, have people started to realize or had the insight that, that you're having right now?
Look, it is definitely getting spoken about, but there is still massive challenges of governance, adoption, approval, investment, road mapping, enterprise architecture. There's still this laundry list. I was just 2 weeks ago, I was emceeing the B2B Commerce World APAC event down in Melbourne, and there was a number of AI keynotes been given from the stage, and there was a couple of firesides that were given from the stage where some businesses were talking about their AI journeys. And certainly there's still this massive disconnect between what AI can do and what it can do for us. And this is the big disconnect. And it's a real challenge because one of the roundtables, they were talking about how they even had a really hard time deciding which AI agent they were going to use internally to make their teams more efficient. So, okay, are we going to use standardize on ChatGPT? Are we going to standardize on Copilot? Are we going to standardize on Grok? Are we going to standardize on Gemini? What are we going to standardize on? And they standardized ultimately on Copilot because they were a Microsoft shop and they were using Microsoft technology across for internal use across all their computers. And so they decided to basically ban any other LLMs in the business other than Copilot. Now that's a major issue, and I've experienced it with some of my clients where they go, well, you know, some of our teams, they go, well, Copilot isn't good for what we do. Like, for example, in IT, ChatGPT is significantly better for us if we're trying to troubleshoot something or we're trying to, you know, write some, let's say we run NetSuite and we're trying to write a piece of suite script. Well, ChatGPT is going to give us a much better response for that than Copilot doesn't know. And it's totally useless for that purpose inside our business. And so there is this massive battle whereby AI is just currently, as of today, as of mid-2025, it is turning out to be just another form of shadow IT, unfortunately. And so there are people inside the business that are bringing their own device, and they're going, okay, well, you won't let me use ChatGPT on my work laptop, but I got my personal phone right here, and I got a subscription to ChatGPT, so I'm just gonna use my own ChatGPT because I need this to make me more efficient and so that I keep my job, and so I'm gonna use it. I'm going to use Gemini on my phone or whatever it is, and then I'm going to email myself the responses, or I'm going to WhatsApp myself the responses. And so this is in the trenches. This is literally happening today because these companies are trying to lock down usage AI under very strict traditional IT governance rules, and that just doesn't work in a modern, fast moving AI innovation environment.
No, and I've even talked to some other people who talk about the incentives are not the incentive structure is not correct. Like, we should be incentivizing experimentation, but we're incentivizing results.
Yes.
And so the problem is people are afraid to experiment because they're tied to these results. They're not incented to be innovative, right?
Yes.
And that's going to be a challenge. Like, the company that figures it out gets ahead because ultimately they save on costs by leveraging AI, right?
Yes.
What do you think about this, like, fear that, you know, AI is a fad or that it's going to destroy everything? What's your take there?
Look, I think it's really interesting because I guess I'm quite a bit older than you, so I remember I remember what society looked like pre-internet. I remember what society looked like with the coming of the internet, the mainstreaming of the internet, and then what I like to call the mainlining of the internet. And then I also saw that same pattern play out when mobile became the norm, the normal. Yeah. It became normalized, and once we went from BlackBerry Pearls to the iPhone 3GS when it first came out, I remember, and it was like, oh my God, this is so transformational that, okay, nothing will ever be the same again. I remember when mobile first started to hit, and all of a sudden we had a meaningful browser in our hands that was actually good enough to be used as a real browser. And then the app store started to get built, and we started to have the apps, and then it was all about the apps, stupid. And then it started to meaningfully impact our lives. And I remember how fast that happened versus how fast or how slow it was for people to adopt the original internet, web browsers, search engines, etc. And it was like it was reduced by like a factor of 10 in terms of the adoption rate. Like adoption curve went through the roof. What we're seeing now is that AI is being adopted at like 10x the rate mobile was. Right. So this is truly turning out to be the fourth industrial revolution. Yeah. Now, it's still very early days. I'm not trying to say that AI is going to replace us all tomorrow by any stretch of the imagination. But I tell you, the people that are the most curious, that retain their curiosity and play with these tools now as much as possible, they are going to come out the other side of this so far ahead of the game that, you know, people that are too afraid of it to even play with it. Like about 9 months ago, I installed a plugin in my Brave browser to where every single Omnibox query gets redirected to ChatGPT. And I realized that, okay, if I try to dabble with these LLMs versus go cold turkey, instead of trying to do like half my searches on Google and then do half my searches via ChatGPT. No, if I really want to learn how these things work, if I really want to figure out how prompt engineering works, if I really want to figure it out, I need to go cold turkey, no longer do, you know, search engine based searches, and I need to do LLM based searches. And so I'm playing mostly with ChatGPT, but I also play with Grok, yeah, Gemini, and many others every day. And I tell you, it's been so interesting because even I haven't plumbed the depths of what they're capable of yet. And I'm using them literally every single day. And I use many additional software tools that have AI at their core. Yeah. So I'm building apps in Lovable just to get experience with it and just to understand what vibe coding looks like. So I think if you can stay curious, then, you know, I don't have a crystal ball. I can't tell you what it's going to look like exactly in 1 or 2 years, but I know that AI is going to be used more than it is today. And that I can be sure of.
All right. It's time for some predictions. Okay. Yep. So I like to do predictions here because I like to look back and see whether or not we were right or wrong. If you had a crystal ball, Jason, what do you think is in store for us with AI and B2B and everything we discussed so far?
Look, I think I kind of look at B2B and AI a little bit like I look at India and some other countries that completely skipped the desktop computer revolution. I have lots of friends and I have lots of clients based in India, based in Southeast Asia, based all over the world, right? And in many of these, you know, quote unquote third world or second world countries or whatever you want to call them that were technically very late to the digital party, in many cases, they completely leapfrogged inferior technology and they went straight to, like, for many Indians, this was the first computer they ever had in their life. And it was instantly wireless. It was connected to the internet 24/7. They had it in their pocket or within 6 inches of their body 24/7 from the first computer that they got. And so we have a situation where many Indians, for example, they're more technically advanced because they didn't deal with all the rubbishy, you know, they never had to deal with dial-up. They never had to deal with big clunky desktop computers. They in many cases, they never even had to deal with laptop computers. They went straight to tablets and mobiles. And so they leapfrogged much of the Western English-speaking world because that's just the way the technology rolled out in their countries. And wireless made all the difference in the world, right? They didn't have to have terrestrial phone lines, which many, particularly people that live in remote areas, they didn't have. They didn't have terrestrial landlines. And so they didn't have access to the internet until they got one of these. And so I think that's exactly what's happening with AI now, is that instead of having to have three e-commerce replatforms before we get to the good stuff, now, for the very first time, when B2Bs implement commerce technology, it is going to be AI first, it's going to be AI ready, it's going to be AI enabled, and it's most likely going to be SaaS in most instances, to where they're going to get the benefit of all these upgrades without having to replatform moving forward. So they're going to leapfrog a whole bunch of really crappy commerce technology, and they're going to jump straight to the good stuff. And that's very exciting for me.
And one thing that we talked about is this possibility that, you know, who knows what our economy will look like. You know, obviously we still need consumers, and if we don't have consumers, we don't have revenue. So there is an element of stasis or stableness that we will achieve with AI usage. What I'm excited about is the opportunity for smaller teams, smaller companies, individuals to do things that were only possible with large organizations before at a fraction of the cost. Mm-hmm. Tell me more about that, because I know you're doing some amazing stuff with your usage of AI. Is insane, obviously.
Yeah, well, look, I wouldn't be able to put out three podcast episodes a week. I wouldn't be able to, you know, edit them, post-produce them, distribute them. I wouldn't be able to do all of that without AI-first technology, right? Yeah. Like with my podcast, I use Descript and I use other AI-first technologies to help me with that. I'm using AI to build apps that wouldn't, you know, the beauty of vibe coding, using apps like Lovable, is that you're going to see a lot more smaller pieces of software in the world that are tailor-made for the business or tailor-made for the individual, right? Yeah. So I'm not a coder, but I'm a very technical non-developer. Right. I am now – so I've had lots of software ideas over the years, but I never actioned any of them, because to even get to a basic functioning prototype –
it's like 200K.
It took so long, and it took so long, and it was so expensive that I just never – I never took action on them.
Yeah,
I am just about at the end of developing an internal use tool that I'm going to sell. It's going to be called Jason AI, and it is trained – it is a chat interface, an AI-based chat interface that's trained on all of my YouTube content. And so basically, I've created a RAG pipeline that's vectorized all of my content based on the transcripts from YouTube. Yeah. I'm building a vectorized chat interface over the top of that I can query. I can query all my content, you know, what's the best B2B e-commerce platform? Then not only does it give me a structured answer based on the content, but it gives me the references of where it's pulled that information from, which video, the exact time point in that video where I discuss that topic, and I'm making it clickable so that then it opens that video in a new tab at exactly the point where I talk about that subject, or wherever me and the guest talk about that subject. Now, that is amazing, because I'm coming out with a new subscription service for my consulting, whereby it'll be a group or cohort-based consulting for businesses that don't need that heavy-duty one-to-one-based consulting, but they will get the companion Jason AI app along with that they can ask 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They can ask questions of my content and get meaningful responses. So this is the type of thing that, like, I would never have done that outside of these vibe coding platforms. I would never paid the 20 grand or the 50 grand or whatever it would cost to have a developer build this, test it, take 3 months, whatever. I've been working on it just for a few weeks, and it's cost me less than $1,000 so far. So very exciting.
And you know, this speaks to like the possibility that AI will democratize SaaS. Like think about, you've got these like huge vendors, these huge monoliths that kind of control have all the power, because they can come along and say, there's no way you, Mr. Customer, could develop your own e-commerce platform.
Yes.
We've got 20 years behind us. You know what I mean? Yes. And we've got 200 developers. And the customer says, oh no, I only have like two developers, and like, I don't even know what I'm doing in e-commerce, so I'll give you the money. But now what you're saying is, especially for B2B, right, where each application is unique, each portal's different, everybody needs something else from their website, and there's no out of the box, ready to go template for B2B, they can in-house some of that development and be like, actually, I'm not worried anymore because I have AI tools. And what's great is that those companies that struggle with governance, because of size, because of red tape, because of how they're structured, will struggle to adopt that technology for productivity reasons. So yeah, I think this is kind of optimistic. Like, I think we're almost going to move away from these behemoth monopolies towards a more fragmented vendor, a more competitive vendor structure, and where customers are empowered to make their own products, which is interesting because we'll move back to the maybe make your own, or maybe even like buy to build kind of paradigm. Yes. So,
yeah, it's exciting. If I think back, you know, 20 years ago, there was a lot of access-based database apps that people built inside their organizations for very select pieces of work in their business, right? Specific automations, specific efficiencies. That's what I think vibe coding is going to enable. I don't think the monoliths are going to go away anytime soon, just because they fulfill so many large-scale, very complex functions in the business. So I don't think your major ERP players are going to go away. Like, I wouldn't dream of vibe coding an ERP. I probably wouldn't even dream of vibe coding a commerce platform, but it's the little pieces of functionality that I need that are very unique to my business to do a very specific function that is not covered by the ERP, the commerce system, and some other major apps that I'm already running in my business, or the D365s of the world, or whatever it is that I'm running in my business. There are very, very specific functions that historically I would have had to rely on a custom software development house to come in and build for me. Those little pieces of apps or functionality that are the glue that tie our organizations together to make us really efficient. We can insource a lot of that now. And I think that's very exciting. And I think it keeps a lid on, especially for the micro SaaS apps that are out there that do lots of little things. It's going to definitely keep the lid on the escalating prices of those.
That's very good news for customers. Yes. So, all right, I have one last question for you, which is, like, you know, you already talked about Lovable, vibe coding. You've talked about your vectorized, what did you call it? RAG?
Vectorized Daddy Store, yeah.
Okay, something, RAG something. I don't know what RAG is exactly, but we'll put that in the show notes. Yeah. What's your favorite, or any other tools or any other way of using AI that you've discovered recently?
Look, I'm using AI literally every single day for everything. I have it review documentation. I have it. It is the most amazing research assistant that I've ever had. And so when I'm out there looking for data, like, let's say I'm doing research on behalf of a customer and I need to put together a report, I need to whatever, and I need to get some raw source material, some source data from across the internet, I can tell you that ChatGPT is far, far better at finding source data than a standard Google search. Obviously, now Gemini augmented search is a little bit better, but still, its ability to pull down information out of images, out of PDFs, out of all these different documents that are scattered around the internet, to pull meaningful information and context out of that data so that then I can present it and reference it in my reports. It is phenomenal. Like I'm saving probably 75% on research time just because of answer engines, which is what I like. They're answer engines. They're not search engines. They're answer engines. And that's the difference. That's the key difference. So it's helping me in almost everything. And even down to, I'll upload, okay, here's my report, my first draft of my report. Scan this. Give me any ideas in ways that I can improve this, make it slightly more clear, make it more readable, make it more digestible. You know what? You know, just to get some feedback like a research assistant would do, and then it'll, you know, just give me a okay. We recommend you do this. We recommend you do that. We recommend you do this. You know, here's a sample so that you can see kind of what we mean, and then boom, I can go and I can make it more readable. I can review it. I can make sure that it is just as perfect as it can be before it gets to the customer. So there's a lot of things here. I already use it in content. I will continue to use it in an escalating way. And in fact, I've got like four more micro apps already documented that I want to build after I get finished building this Jason AI app. There's some content distribution and redistribution stuff that I want to build that doesn't exist. It doesn't exist in the market the way I want it to work. And so therefore I've got like four more or five more apps already in mind that I want to build to make me more efficient in my daily processes that I have to do, not only with client work, but also from content perspective. So I got some really exciting things up my sleeve.
That's really, I can't honestly can't wait to see what you do next and what you develop next. So Thank you so much for joining me today and dropping knowledge bombs as always.
No worries.
And to everyone else, until next time. That concludes another episode of The Commerce Order, powered by Keepo, where we explore the evolving landscape of commerce from cutting-edge AI and digital transformation to strategies for optimizing operations and enhancing the customer journey. If you enjoyed today's conversation, please take a moment to subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and share this podcast with your colleagues and friends.
We love hearing from our listeners. If you have a suggestion for a future guest or are interested in being a guest yourself, please reach out to us. To learn more about exciting upcoming Keepo features and announcements, visit our website at keepocommerce.com and follow us on our LinkedIn page by searching for Keepo Commerce. You can also find these links in the podcast notes. Tune in next time for a fresh new episode of The Commerce Order, powered by Keepo.